listening to the Christian Commute for Good Friday, April 2nd. And I hope you enjoyed this year's April Fool's Day, April 1st show with my special guest host, Beth Moore, along with Joyce Meyer. If I recall, last year's episode, which was also a show done from home and not in the car, it was Stephen Furtick was the host of that show. And I think Joyce Meyer was with him too. The year before was in the car, and I remember Kenneth Copeland was on it, and he was in the car with James White, and they did not agree. So I always look forward to doing the April 1st, April Fool's Day show with a guest host. And as you should have learned from that show, Monday's show, I did record a show in the car, and it was lost because I listened to it, and the recording was just no good. My microphone messed up, so you could hardly hear me, and I didn't want to publish the show, so I decided just to scrap it and record it again when I had a good microphone. So I'm not actually at work right now. I am driving to a lunch with a vendor in Acworth, and it's about a 15-minute drive each way, so I thought, you know what? I'll record a Christian Commute since I didn't get to do one Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. I know the listeners must be clamoring for more Christian Commute. So today's show title is Ad-Free Pulpit and Pen. Ad-Free Pulpit and Pen. I have a question in the inbox. I'm going to have to stop in the parking lot of my neighborhood clubhouse here, though, because I forgot before I left to look one up. Let's see. Let me stop. Riveting radio, I know. This is what happens when I get out of my routine. Let's see, what am I going to answer? Let's see. Coptic Christianity, I'm going to cover that. What's the question here? All right, what is... it's a little too involved for the car because it's a specific thing about Coptic Christianity. Let me find an easy one. I'm going to go out of order and find an easy one. Let's see here. You know what? I'm going to go to the top of the list and get Shay's question about the term Allah. That'll be an easy one. Okay, so I'm going to answer a question about the term Allah. And I'm going out of order, but you know, I didn't do any show prep or any thought, so I have to answer one that's super easy. So I'm going to do that, but first, as always, we have the Bible chapter review. Perfectly timed for Good Friday, because the next Sunday after this is Easter, and we're going to talk about Jesus being risen at church, I'm sure. So we're in Mark chapter 16, verse 5. Mark chapter 16, verse 5. And entering the tomb, they saw a young man sitting at the right wearing a white robe, and they were amazed. So if you will recall, the women were going to the tomb on the morning after the Sabbath, on Sunday morning, to attend to the body of Jesus. You know, they had to anoint the body, you know, put oil on it so it doesn't decay all nasty. And just as a reminder for the burial practices back then, somebody would be put in a tomb until their body rotted down to nothing but bones, and then the bones would be placed in an ossuary. So that's, and they were going in to anoint the body that had been placed in the tomb, and they were all wondering among themselves, how are we going to move this big stone that's in front of the entrance to the tomb? I hope somebody's there to move it for us. And when they got there, they noticed the stone was already rolled away and moved. So when they entered, here sits this young man in a white robe, and they're amazed because the tomb is the stone is open, and there's just a young man in a white robe in there. And we infer from the context that this young man is an angel. Mark doesn't use the word angelos to indicate angel, which could technically, you know, literally be translated as messenger, but we translate it as angel when we're talking about an angelic being. But we take this to be an angelic being who's sitting there. And he certainly acts like an angelic being because he's telling these women what to do. And they're listening to him. It's just not some random guy. You know, they don't go, "We're not listening to you, rando. Where's the Lord?" But he says, "Do not be amazed. Take the next right onto Old Mill Road. You are looking for Jesus the Nazarene, who has been crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See, here is the place where they laid him. Now, this is very important that he refers to him as Jesus the Nazarene, because I want to remind you guys that Jesus is a super common name. We still use it today in the Anglo world, or the English-speaking world. We call it Joshua. All right. So, Jesus in the Greek, I can't pronounce it for you in the Aramaic, but in the Hebrew, it's Yeshua. So if you're reading the Old Testament and it's talking about Joshua, if you were reading the Old Testament in Hebrew, remember Joshua, Moses and Joshua, not Moses and Joshua, yeah, Moses and Joshua, and you would read Yeshua, all right? So that was the same name that Jesus had, Jesus in the Greek, when we say Jesus in the English. But we also have people named Joshua. Oh, same name, no matter how you pronounce it. And it's a common name now, and it was a common name then among Jewish people, because Joshua was a hero to them. And Jesus was named Joshua for a reason, because he was a savior of his people. So he says, you're looking for Jesus the Nazarene, specifying which Jesus for whom they were looking. And he also said, the one who's been crucified, as if there could be any confusion about which Jesus you're looking for. It's the Nazarene who has been crucified. And he says, he has risen, he is not here. See, here is the place where they laid him. And the women saw this. That was the prior few verses, or the end of chapter 15. They were looking from afar when Joseph of Arimathea had Jesus put there, had his body put there. And now he's gone, and the young man informs these women that he is risen, he is not here. Now this is something that would amaze me, but he's saying, don't be amazed. And now the angel gives them, I'm calling him the angel, the young man in the white robe, if I want to stick to the text, gives them instructions in verse 7, but go tell his disciples and Peter, he is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you. Remember, Jesus had already told them all what was going to happen before he was crucified. So don't be amazed because Jesus is making good on his word. Don't be amazed. Jesus said this was going to happen. Don't be surprised. Don't be in awe. Jesus said it was going to be like this. Those of us from Chattanooga who were born in the 80s remember the weatherman Paul Barris and their little theme for him, their little advertisement, their slogan on WRCB News Channel 3 was, Paul said it was going to be like this. When Paul Barris told you the weather, you could count on it. You walked out, it's sunny. Paul said it was going to be like this. You sat in the house looking in the rain. Paul said it was going to be like this. When Jesus says something's going to happen, it's going to happen. Jesus said it was going to be like that, and you can count on it. Do not be amazed. And he tells them, go to Galilee. He's going to Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you. And here's what the women do in verse 8. And this is the last verse of Mark that we're going to cover. All right? Because after this is what's called the long ending of Mark. And before I transition to Matthew, because I'm going to do Matthew next, that's my plan, I'm going to do a show just on the long ending of Mark. And that'll be the whole show. But it's not going to be a Bible chapter review, because I don't believe that verse 9 and onward were original to the text of Mark. They were added later. It doesn't mean that the events in question didn't happen. Some of them clearly did. There's a reference to Jesus and the two guys who were walking to Emmaus in the long ending of Mark. There's that. Now, we know that happened because it's in Luke. So, not saying that these things didn't happen or weren't said. I'm just saying that they were not in the autograph of Mark. It's not my belief that they were. All right. So, we're going to end right here on verse 8. And we're going to be finished with the book of Mark. I could have made two Bible chapter reviews out of this, but you know what? I only did two shows this week, counting this one. And they went out and fled from the tomb, for trembling and astonishment had gripped them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. The end. These women go to the tomb. They're amazed at what they find there. The angel, again, the young man in the white robe, who we think is an angel, tells them, he's not here. He's risen. Go ahead to Galilee. Go tell Peter and the disciples about it. And these women flee. And they're scared. And they didn't say anything to anyone, Mark says. They didn't go around telling everybody. Like, they could have ran out screaming to everybody around. Hey, the body's gone. There's a guy in there. He just was gone. Down the whole town. But they didn't do that. It's just that's a very abrupt ending to the story, isn't it? And that's probably why someone felt compelled to add other stuff to it, because the story ends abruptly. Matthew and Luke don't end so abruptly. And that's that. That's the Gospel of Mark. Jesus is risen, just like he said he was going to. And much is made, by the way. I don't know. This argument doesn't sway me, but I think it sways a lot. I guess because I don't need to be swayed, because I grew up in church and I've just always believed this. I've just always believed the story. I've never been kind of hemming and hawing on the legitimacy of the story. I know some people, maybe those who don't grow up in church, hem and haw, or maybe some who have some kind of doubt in their life. And I get that. I understand it. But I've just, by God's grace, have never hemmed and hawed and doubted. And I think maybe that's the reason why little details like this don't really sting me or say, oh, wow, well, that's great. I didn't notice that, or I didn't think about that. Sometimes apologists will note that we should believe the account of Mark, because if he was trying to lie or make a fantastic story, he wouldn't make women the witnesses to the biggest event in the history of Christianity, or quite frankly, the history of the world since creation. And the argument is that women in this culture were not considered reliable witnesses. Like, women couldn't go to court and testify against you and convict you. They were women. They were second-class citizens. So if Mark wanted to make up a story to make his account more legit, he would not have sent women to be the primary witnesses or the initial witnesses of the resurrection. It would have been a man. Hold on. He's stuck in traffic. And that's an argument apologists use. And they say, see, if he was trying to make it up, he wouldn't have made it women. He would have, somebody else would have been the witness. It would have been men or somebody more prominent. You know, it could have been Joseph of Arimathea or something. But that's what some apologists say. And, you know, thinker than I am, I'm already like, but what if I was trying to make it look so legit? If I was going to lie, I'll make women the witnesses. And somebody would say, well, if Seth was lying, he'd never make women the witnesses. So that's why I don't think that's my answer to that argument. If some apologist says that to me, see, it's women, I'd be like, that's exactly what he would do to make you think it. I don't know. I just don't like that argument. I know it plays with some people. Maybe you've heard it. Maybe you never have. It's one of those things. Especially since apologetics became popular, preachers will tend to try to give answers to the skeptics while they preach the Gospels and be like, well, you've heard of swoon theory, just like I told you about swoon theory. Or, well, you've heard, why would it be women? I just never really have cared for that argument. And the only reason I bring it up is because I'm an apologist, and I know that's an unpopular apologetic argument. It didn't have anything to do with anything. All right, now let's move on to the Bible chapter review. And I'm going to have to be careful here, because I think I have time to get this done before I get to the restaurant. Not the Bible chapter review, the inbox. And then I'm going to have to pause the show and remember not to delete my file and then upload the right files to the computer. Listen, half the time when I have two files on the phone, I'll upload the wrong one. It's just how it happens. And you end up with duplicate shows. Thank you, Aaron from Texas, for telling me about the duplication the other day. I uploaded two files, or the same file, in two different episodes. I've fixed that already. But do you have a question about theology or apologetics? You can send it to SethDunn88@gmail.com. SethDunn88@gmail.com. Alternatively, You can dial 470-315-0875. That is the Christian Commute Roadside Assistance Line. Today's question comes from Shay in North Carolina. A man named Shay, not a woman. That's a unisex name. Hey, Seth, what do you think about a former Muslim, now a Christian, continuing to use the term Allah when referring to God? What's his native language is my first question. Okay, so that's what is his native language? And the reason for that is that the Arabic word for God is Allah. Just like the English word for God is God, the Greek word for God is Theos, the Latin word for God is Deus. Let's see here. What other languages do I know the word God? Hebrew, El. El is the word for God. And by the way, in all those languages, it can refer to the true God or a false God. What you might call a little g God. Because in the Greek pantheon, there were lots of gods in the Roman pantheon. So remember, God's just a word. God's name is Yahweh. That's his name. And we only know it because he revealed it to us. Firstly, he revealed it to Moses, and it was later revealed to us in Scripture. His name is I Am. And I guess he gave himself a name. Because usually you get a name from your creator, right? Your mom and dad gave you a name. I gave my kids a name. God didn't have a mom and dad. So I guess he named himself. And his name has something to do with his nature. Because he's a necessary being, and he just exists. His name is I Am. Yahweh, I Am. All right? But we have all these words for God, and I bet there's Asian words and a blue million words. The Arabic word for God is Allah. So when they are talking about who they think is God, who they think revealed the Quran to, Muhammad, sorry, I forgot his name. That's the most popular name in the world. That one, number one, and I forgot it. Muhammad, what's his face? What do they always say? Muhammad, God bless his soul or whatever. May he be honored. Whatever Muslims say. Anyway, they're referring to God. They just say Allah. Allah did this in Arabic. So if you're a Muslim and you get saved, what are you supposed to say? When you're referring to God, you're always going to say Allah. What you'd reject is the idea that Allah gave us the Quran or that Muhammad was a prophet of Allah. Now, let's talk about an English-speaking Muslim, because there's Muslims all over the world. I don't know why an English-speaking Muslim would use the term Allah. Why wouldn't he just say God? I don't say El when I'm talking about God. I say God. Or I'll say the Lord, which is the way we English people have come to translate Yahweh, even though it's Adonai is technically the word for Lord. But we say our English terms. I don't say El. I don't say Deus. I don't say Allah because I'm not Arabic. So, Shay, my question is your friend an English speaker or an Arabic speaker? If they're Arabic, I wouldn't expect them to use any other word. If they're English, I would say, well, why have you been calling God Allah this whole time? And maybe Muslims, English-speaking Muslims do call God Allah. And I don't know why. I guess it's because they think the Quran is the exact inspired word of God, and it's the Quran must be Arabic. Did you guys know that? Anything that's not Arabic is not the Quran. Like, I have an English book with the words of the Quran, but it's called The Message of the Quran. The Quran is in the Arabic. So maybe they feel that they should say God in Arabic, and that's probably in their mind. Muscle memory, if you will. I don't know if that counts as muscle memory. They just tend to refer to God as Allah. But if somebody is a Christian, when he's thinking of God, he's thinking of God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. That's what he's thinking of. But he may have been, when he used to refer to God, he believed in God the whole time. He just had a false conception of God. He would say Allah, and that's probably has something to do with Muslim culture, where even English-speaking Muslims, I've heard them do it, refer to God as Allah. They shouldn't be doing that. They should be saying God. Because it's weird. Why do you say that one word in Arabic, but every other word you in your sentence you say in English?
And most English-speaking Muslims, most English-speaking people and most English-speaking Muslims, I'd probably argue most non-Arabic Muslims, don't even know Arabic. They may have the Quran translated in Arabic, but I don't know what the words mean. Just like you could put John 3:16 down in front of a kid in the Greek and say, memorize this. You know, haso pisteuon, you know, for God so loved the world. I used to know it. Gar, theon, agape, hoste, ton kosmon. I mean, those of you who don't know Greek don't know what I'm saying, but that's for God so loved the world in Greek. So I would say that this person probably has a habit of referring to God via the Arabic name, even though theologically and in his spirit and soul, he no longer believes in the God of the Quran, but the God of real life. I was going to say the God of the Bible, but the God of real existence is the God of the Bible, and any other God is a false God or a false understanding of God. So I doubt your friend is a Unitarian who believes in the Quran. He's a Christian now, Shay. I don't know. I'm assuming you have this friend. I don't know who you... Maybe you're referring to some stranger. So what I would say to him is, I understand why you're saying Allah, but you need to stop that. You should just say God, because when you say Allah in our specific cultural context, that has come to, especially if you're in the English-speaking world, that has come to refer to the Muslim God. Even though a sociologist or historian would tell you that Jews, Christians, and Muslims have the same God, because they all believe in Abraham, they all believe, they're all monotheists, and they all believe in this, that there's this one God who created Adam and Eve and had dealings with Abraham and Moses. All right, and they'd say, oh, we all believe in the same God. And the Christians would say, well, not really, because they're Unitarian and we're Trinitarians, and we believe in a Trinitarian God. And there's the argument, well, do they believe in the same God or a different God? And it gets down to, well, the nature of God. But yes, we're all monotheists, and you could all fairly say we follow sociologically an Abrahamic religion. But I think, talking about an English-speaking Muslim, I think an English-speaking Muslim who's not a Christian, who's still a Muslim, I think he should say God instead of Allah just because of language, all right? But especially if it's an English-speaking former Muslim who's become a Christian, should probably stop saying Allah, because that's the whole Arabic theology that's come in. But I understand why they say it. I mean, I wouldn't say you're a heretic for saying it. I would just talk to them about it. And like I said, if it was an Arabic speaker, that's just their word for God. So thank you for listening to the first half of the show. And I'm going to pause this, go eat with my vendor, and then come back and talk about pulpit and pen. Okay, and I'm back for lunch. Back from lunch. 1 second for you, an hour for me. So let me back out of my parking space here in Ackworth. Ackworth has this street parking where you got to back out. What is this, Highway 92? Whew, I feel full. Hold on, I got to breathe. Henry's Louisiana Grill in Ackworth, as I told my dining companion, is probably the best restaurant within 100 miles of here. He'd never been here, and he lives in Ackworth. So lucky for him, for me to turn him on to that. I was having dinner with one of my many vendors. Now let's talk about today's show topic, ad-free pulpit and pen. Do you guys remember when I used to be a blogger? I guess you could still say that I'm a blogger, even though I might blog, I don't know, 4 times this year. It's 2021, and I don't think I've published... No, I published one. I published one blog, maybe 2 at Pulpit and Pen. So before I was a podcaster, I was a blogger, what some might call a Christian discernment blogger, at Pulpit and Pen, what's been called the Rolex of watch blogs. And I used to write a lot of things about especially Southern Baptist interest, what needs to be fixed or what's going wrong in evangelicalism. But I kept having more kids, and between, you know, I've got a full-time job, and I have a
have a real job. I mean, I'm not going to say somebody's job isn't real. What I mean by that, like, I don't work part-time at Blockbuster Video and live in my mom's basement. Like, I have a very important job. I am a boss. So this is not the kind of job where, like, well, my 8 hours is done. I guess I'll go do whatever I want now. That's not how it works. So I have a job where it takes, you know, some days you work 8 hours and some days you don't. You work as long as it takes to get the job done. And it's a job for an old 40-year-old man. So I don't have a lot of time to blog. It's not how I make my living. I make my living at my real job. So that doesn't leave a lot of time for blogging. And then on top of that, I've got my sixth child coming in June. So my week this week has been Monday night baseball, Tuesday night baseball, Wednesday night church, Thursday night baseball, and who knows what we'll do tonight. So I just don't have the time to blog anymore. And if something really strikes me, I might write about it. My writing pursuit now, if I'm going to sit down and write something, is going to try to finish So Long, well, not So Long, Beth Moore, Breaking Free of Beth Moore. Yes, I remember, Jeff. I still owe you a book. I'm looking at it right now. So I don't have time to blog anymore, but I used to blog at Pulpit and Pen. And there was a time there, a couple of years ago, when Pulpit and Pen was really humming. We were one of the top, by page clicks, by views, Christian sites in the world, by the Amazon Alexa rankings. And I don't know how much money Jordan was making off ads, but he eventually added ads to the site. And when he did, in my opinion, and in the opinion of others, it hurt the credibility of the site. Because you go somewhere, and these ads pop up at you, and they became more and more ads. And people are like, this is a sketchy website. It looks like they're just trying to get people here for clicks, all right? So in my mind as a blogger, it's never been my mission to get clicks or views at a website for the sake of getting clicks or views. It's about the story. I do not write clickbait articles, but there are and have been articles at Pulpit and Pen, now Protestia, which you could say are clickbait. You read the headline, and those headlines are... Dustin is very good at the clickbait headlines. Usually some article by Dustin. We call them junk posts. And the strategy at Pulpit and Pen got to be get people to the site with junk posts. And for every 9 junk posts, we'll have a substantive post that will educate them about something, hopefully that they'll take action. That was the strategy. And here's the thing when you're dealing with the written word and content on the internet. People have about a 2-minute or 3-minute attention span, and they'll click on an article and read it if they can read it in about 3 minutes. And if you make a strongly theologically argued, substantive post that it maybe even involves journalism, what you might call long-form writing, people don't read it. So you may find long-form journalism in a magazine. Like if you're going to get a Time magazine or the New Yorker or something like that, you find still long-form journalism. And this is journalism that might take weeks and trips and interviews to create. But most of the time, people don't want to read that on the internet. Think of the average reader scrolling through Facebook. They might click on restaurant workers tell their most interesting stories. And it's a series of 10 stories that take 30 seconds to read. That's the kind of attention span people have in a Twitter universe. And unfortunately, if you have a website that you're trying to publish, even if it's a blog, if people are going to read it, it has to come to that. And between clickbait posts and Facebook basically shadow banning the Pulpit and Pen, here's an example. If Jordan Hall writes an article and says, Bruce Jenner is a man, that's hate speech. That's dead naming to Facebook. And you're going to get what's called a shadow ban. You're going to get accused of being fake news. So Pulpit and Pen and what was rebranded as Protestia, you know, the golden age of Pulpit and Pen and Protestia is over.
And, you know, I think it's done its job. It's made people aware of certain things it needs to be aware of. But especially with me, I just don't blog anymore. I know Dustin Germain has been the general editor of Pulpit and Pen and Protestia twice. He writes a lot of articles, and Dustin works somewhere like a big box retailer, and he has one kid, and he has time to devote to Pulpit and Pen in the employ of Jordan, like, to get a monthly salary to do articles. So he's always going to be putting the articles out there, normally shorter articles. But as far as people like me, or if you remember Bud Aldheim, we just don't have time to do it anymore. And quite frankly, people don't like discernment bloggers. Like, they don't even like that people talk about such things. They want to ignore the problems. Liken it to, say, sexual abuse. Obviously, me writing about Perry Noble playing Highway to Hell by AC/DC at a megachurch Easter service is, you know, not as traumatic or damning to someone as being sexually abused. I mean, because you go to jail for one of those things. But if you think about things like sexual abuse and how, and any, you know, almost any kind of abuse that can go on as an open secret for a long time, why does it happen? Why don't people put a stop to it? Well, because it's just unpleasant to talk about or think about. Nobody wants to bring that out into the open. It's embarrassing. I think that's why you see a lot of these abuse scandals get big, especially like in a big organization like the Roman Catholic Church. How does this happen for so long? Well, we know it's there, which we don't want to talk about it. And to a lesser degree, it's the same with discernment blogging. Like, we don't want to hear that the president of the SBC has a fire truck baptistry. We don't want to hear that the president of the ERLC is saying you should go to gay wedding receptions. You know, we want to sit in our pew on Sunday and watch a five-minute video about how great Lottie Moon was and give $1 million to her offering. That's what we want to do. We don't want to hear about the liberal seminary professors. We don't want to hear about money being wasted. It's unpleasant. And that's how people view discernment blogging. They just don't like bad news. And they don't like the people who bring them bad news. And eventually they accuse you of being clickbait or slander, etc., etc. Thus we find ourselves on the other end of Pulpit and Pen's golden age. But I have good news. Recently, Pulpit and Pen and Protestia have gone ad-free. Now, there's still ads at the bottom of the page, and by the way, those ads have to do with your cookies. Sometimes people will write us and be like, there's an ad for some heretical organization, or even, you know, there's an ad for tennis shoes, but the model wearing the tennis shoes is in a bra and panties or something. Like, there's pornography on your site. Like, no, that's a tennis shoe ad, and, you know, we didn't know. Obviously, we don't want that ad there, but we can't catch everything. Ads are generally based on your cookies. And you can ban certain categories, like sexual categories, but still stuff slips through. And Pulpit and Pen, because of these ads, almost got unreadable. You're reading an article and there's an ad in the middle. It's like, I don't want to read this ad in the middle. So that got to be a problem. Well, now Pulpit and Pen is ad-free, Protestia is ad-free, except for the little pop-up ad. So now when you go to Pulpit and Pen, you'll get a pop-up that says you can support the website here. Yeah, you can give money to the Patreon here, but you can close that and then go about reading your article. And now there's no pop-up videos and there's no ads in the middle of your article. By the way, I've never been involved with the management decisions of the site. I've hated those ads. I don't like them. I think it takes away from the legitimacy of the site. But the money to pay the server fees and domain fees has never been coming out of my pocket. It's like, yeah, almost like a hobby for me. Now, I don't mean to say it's a hobby, because the work is somewhat ministerial in that you're trying to reach people for Christ, and you're trying to warn people about false prophets and false teachers, etc., etc. So I want to say it's not my hobby to warn people about false teachers. You know, my hobby is to go play trivia at restaurants. You know, that's a hobby. So all that to say, I'm very happy to say that Pulpit and Pen has gone essentially ad-free, same thing from Protestia. So what does that mean? I think it means that now you can share these articles with your friends and family without them scoffing at, oh, this is clickbait. And I think it's especially important for the historical articles there, because Pulpit and Pen exists as an archive. I mean, I think there's thousands of articles on there now that are good, relevant articles about major players in Big Eva. And now you can go back and read all those Russell Moore articles, especially now that people like Mike Stone are catching traction in the SBC. Read all those articles about Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary having their Malcolm X read-in day and their Kingdom Diversity Liberalism. You can share that with people, and they'll read it, and they won't think, oh, this isn't some clickbait, ad-based thing. This is legitimate journalism. Listen, the more ads you have on your website, the less legitimate it looks. That's just how it is. Because you think people are doing this for the ads, not for the news. All right. So I'm just very happy to announce that all of my historical arguments, or not arguments, articles at Pulpit and Pen are now still there ad-free. So if you want to send somebody an article about how J.D. Greer was the worst Christian in the world in 2019, go for it. Or Al Mohler was the worst Christian in 2020, go for it. No ads. And as time allows, if I really want to blog something, I'll still try to put it there. I have to get my thoughts out. When I have a thought or I have a message that I want to give to people, it has to get out. And over the last few years and some 1,100 episodes, this podcast has served as that outlet. Obviously, it's not as easy to ingest as an article, because you can read an article in 5 or 10 minutes, the type of articles I write. But that's going to take me maybe a half hour to write. I don't have that half hour anymore. I have the half hour in the car maybe to do this podcast. So for me personally, the Christian commute is still going to be my main outlet when I talk about matters of Christian interest, right? Theology, apologetics, and other matters of Christian interest. Those are the things I would blog about, other matters of Christian interest. You're going to find that here, but if there's really something I feel it's important to blog about, I'll put it there. And I don't think I'm going to change my blogging style. My blogging style is not very caustic. Very rarely do I go after anyone in a blog in a hard way. I think I've written maybe a couple of very critical, like, yes, I'm talking to you. Yeah, right here. I'm looking at you, going after people blogs. I know my open letter to Beth Moore was like that, but most of the other ones are just really trying to make a minimal facts case, just trying to get people to think. I don't think that turns off readers, but I think it doesn't attract many either. Jordan's writing style is more aggressive. It turns off a lot of people, and they won't go to the website, but it turns a lot of them on. So maybe that has hurt the readership of Pulpit and Pen some. I don't know. But I can say when it's all over 50 years from now, that I may not always agree with the style in which things are written. I wouldn't be that aggressive, or I might not even agree with some of the conclusions. Because me and Jordan and Dustin don't agree with each other on everything, and you can throw Jeff Maples in there. But what we did was made people aware of a lot of important things in church world of which they needed to be aware, that could help them be better members of their local church. And, I can say, looking back maybe 50 years from now, if Pulpit and Pen is still there as an archive, I was glad to be a part of that. Whatever our little footnote is in church history. And oftentimes we talk about, in a church history book in 2050, there might be a two-sentence mention of Pulpit and Pen with an unflattering picture of Jordan Hall before his gastric bypass surgery. Who knows? But guys, just this is kind of the announcement for you guys. Pulpit and Pen is now ad-free. So go back and refamiliarize yourself with some of those articles. And those of you who are newer listeners, because I remember that probably the original listeners of this show knew me from being a Pulpit and Pen blogger. And I don't know where I get listeners now. Maybe Bible Thumping Wingnut. I know I've got a couple of listeners from there. And the Pulpit and Pen podcast is still on Bible Thumping Wingnut. I think they title it Polemics Report. guys, go back. If you'll go to Pulpit and Pen, just click on my name. And you can read a lot of what I've written about. That'll help you understand the mindset of this show. So you can look for me to blog there rarely and now ad-free. And hopefully, Lord willing, the Christian commute will go on for a long time. And I have to say this. In the post-COVID world where there's a lot of working from home, I anticipate working from home more. And there are going to be weeks like this where there's just a couple of shows. And we may not get the five-day-a-week Christian commute that we've been used to. And, you know, in as much as pride is okay, because I'm a Christian, I don't like to say I pride myself on things, because pride goeth before the fall. But one of the things I've prided myself on in the Christian commute is it's an everyday podcast. 5 days a week, not 1 week. You know, it's not some podcast where you got your 2 hours or you got your 1 hour and that's it for the week. That people get this every day, and people hear about the Bible every day, and somebody has a question about theology, apologetics, or other matters of Christian interest, are answered every day. And they can get in their car, and they can go about their routine. You know, routines are big with me. I'm autistic. Don't mess with my routine. Like, I was sitting at lunch with the vendor. He went to the bathroom. I checked my email, and the plant manager had scheduled a meeting with me, I think from 12 to 1. It was 11 to 12, and I ate lunch at 11:30. I'm like, you've messed up my routine. Ah! And it's my routine. So I'm big on my routine. Listen, I want to tell you something. I'm talking about my career. You can apply this to my career. But in 7 years of working at the carpet factory where I work, I'll be 7 years in May. And, you know, I've been in the workforce for, you know, like 20 years now. Well, not 20 years. Say 16 years. I have never, not once, scheduled a meeting before 9 a.m. And I have never, ever, you can ask people I've worked with. You can look it up. Scheduled a meeting between 11 and 1. Maybe 11 to 11:30 on rare occasions. But I do not schedule meetings in the morning. And I do not schedule meetings at lunchtime. But when those high above me schedule a meeting like that, I will accept, because that's my job. All that to say, I value my routine probably more than most of you value yours. But we all have our routines, and I want everybody to be able to get in their car in the morning and drive to work, or get in their car and drive home and be able to listen to this podcast. I want everybody, when they go to mow their yard, I know we don't mow our yard every day, to be able to turn the Christian commute on, and there's a new episode. But like I said, in the post-COVID world, I don't go to work as much. So this is a commuting show, and I don't record as much. So there's going to be occasions like yesterday. I'm like, it is April Fool's Day. I'm going to record a show today, maybe stay up a little later, put my work down. Frankly, I've been working when I wake up in the morning, and then, you know, I'll go to lunch, and I'll eat dinner with my kids, go to baseball, and then I get back home, and I go right back to work. I've been super busy. It's just one of those times where I'm covered up at work. And studio shows, what I call studio shows, or home shows, non-driving shows, aren't feasible. But guys, I'm going to still be at it. And hopefully you're still going to be listening to the Christian Commute for a long time. And as you know, the Christian Commute has always been ad-free. Not only do I not want to take the time to splice an ad into the Christian Commute, this is free to you. This is not, I said before, not what I do to make money. Now, some of you do send me support, and I appreciate that very much. But the Christian Commute is not me here selling ad space or asking you for money. It's not a revenue stream. The Millennial VP told me the other day that I had a bad business model, because Monday, I told him, I said, you're going to make the Christian Commute today, because the Millennial VP just busted into my office. He thought I was working from home, and I'm sitting there, because he doesn't have an office. He's a world traveler. He doesn't have an office. He usually comes in and finds a cube. But if I'm not there, or if the plant manager's not there, he'll take our office. And I said, sorry, I'm here today, but you can have it for the rest of the week. And I will mention you on the Christian Commute, Millennial VP, how you tried to steal my office. But we don't have any, you know, there'll be no shows for 4 days a week. He said, you have a bad business model. I said, I don't have a business model at all. I have a revenue stream. It's not about that, man. It's about getting the word out. I always want you to be able to trust me. For what I'm telling you because I believe it, and I think you need to know it. Not because I'm trying to inspire you to support me. Listen, I don't tell you guys what I make or talk about what I make on this show, but I'm not going to make my salary and ask you guys for money. Except for like special occasion things like where the Beth Moore cruise, which by the way, legitimately, like yesterday I mentioned it when I was pretending to be Beth Moore on April Fool's Day, like that cruise is canceled again for 2021. So maybe next year, I don't know. Because in my real life, I'm not going to tell my wife, the mother of my six kids, like, hey, I'm going to go spend $3,000 going on a cruise to troll Beth Moore. That's not going to fly. So things like that, I will absolutely try to raise money for them. And again, not to say I don't need support, because it costs money to be on the Bible Thumping Wingnut, his service. And I think I'm paying about, $500 a year? $30, $360. Quite frankly, I don't know how much it is, but I'm paying about $500 a year for my Podomatic subscription and my website and everything. And every little bit helps when you have six kids. But I'm not going to sit here and try to make a second living off of you listeners while I drive home, because I don't want you listening to me because you think I need to give him more money or support his message. The Lord provides my support, all right, by having provided me with a very good job. And with that, I'm going to pull into my driveway. Thank you for your continued listenership and support. And listen, the gift you give me, I mean, some of y'all send in gifts and they're awesome and I love them, but the gift you give me is listening and acting at your local church to make it better. So for now, I'm gone. I've got to take some stuff to the dump in my dad's truck. Great reason to live close to your parents is you still get to use their stuff and love them. So thanks for listening to the Christian Commute. Lord willing, I'll be back with you again Monday. As always, God bless. And as always, remember, Christianity is not about getting saved. It's about being saved.
Thanks for listening to the Christian Commute. Please send your questions about Christian apologetics and theology to SethDunn88@gmail.com. If you are not a Christian, please remember that you can be reconciled to God through the shed blood of His Son, Jesus Christ. The Bible teaches that all who call on the name of the Lord will be saved. Repent of your sins now and accept Jesus as Lord. God bless.